In this episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, please join us as we interview the guys from The Rise of Sauron, Third Age, Neverwinter Nights 2, Persistent World.
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community, by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hello, it's Martin from aka The Witch King, administrator for the Rise of Sauron, Persistent World for Neverwinter Night 2.
And this is Jim, also known as Barwench, and I am a DM in The Rise of Sauron, Persistent World.
This is A. Rowan, aka DM Silver Adept of the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Hey, this is Brian, aka Sir Brian from the Neverwinter Nights podcast in the Realms of Trinity. And you're listening to the 145th episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games. Well, hey, this is our first episode back in the studio here. We just got back from Columbus a little while ago and had a great interview with Shane. I wanted to send another thanks out to Cryptic and Shane Hensley for coming on the show. Really excited about the new Neverwinter that's coming out. And I hope that everybody out there that's listened to the interview got all the information that they were looking for. We'll hope to get some more updates as the development continues on the new Neverwinter project as it continues. Shane had asked me to stay in touch with him, and I certainly will. And I'll be passing on any questions that you may have out there in the communities for him. Just post them out on our forum or on our Facebook page, and I'll be happy to ask him the questions that, as they come in, and so that get as much information out there as possible. Also, wanted to say thanks to everybody for watching the podcast, listening to the podcast. You know, it was a really great time to get out there into Columbus. We've seen a lot of good people playing role-playing games and all kind of stuff. We were approached several times, right? Me and Rowan couldn't even finish our subway without somebody coming in and, you know, hey, I see the Neverwinter Nights podcast. That's cool. You know, I listened to this and, you know, I was surprised, actually, as many people stopped us while we were there out in Columbus. So I want to thank everybody for listening and, you know, checking it out. It was really a fun time, and I'm glad that we were able to spread the news of Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2 out basically a foreign community, because most of the people didn't even know about it. A lot of people there, this was something new to them. So it was a really good opportunity to try to get some new blood out in the world. So, but we have some news we're going to get into. I got some Neverwinter Nights 1 news and Neverwinter Nights 2 news. We'll start with NWN1. There was a custom content challenge for June 2011 on the IGN Vault. And it's actually for July, but it was done in June. Details are in our show notes, but I want to go over just a couple of some of the winning things just to talk about what was created. It's a lot of cool stuff. There's an improvised weapons pack by Estelundis, 4 clubs and 3 throwing shoes. I checked it out. It was pretty fun looking, and definitely if you want some stuff for your Neverwinter 1 campaigns or stories, this is definitely a cool addition. There's a portrait pack by Mistress. There's 2 new creatures by Rubies. There was a city interior tile set from Sixes Thrice. Was on our episode 135, we interviewed him. But he's put out a whole new tile set that won a custom content challenge. So it's pretty awesome. And last but not least is the Trash Piles and Shelter Placeables by The Amethyst Dragon from the World of Aeneo that we interviewed episode 142. So these guys are continuing to kick it out. Definitely support them by go out into the IGN Vault and check out their forum pages. We have the links to their submissions right in the forum, so check it out.
Okay, so in Neverwinter Nights 2 news, the first item is some prefabs done by Kamal, and the pack is called Kamal's Random Map. He has a beach area, a forest area, desert, and many other various areas that he's set up for people to use. They look fairly impressive. The areas are empty of critters, triggers, waypoints, and area transitions, so you would need to design those yourself. But besides that, it's a pretty nice looking setup. The next thing is a mine quarry and 2-level mine that was created by Ugly Duck. This is a mine run area that has an exterior area with an interior underground mining quarry.
Hopefully, Ugly Duck's probably not the best of names for it, because these areas are actually rather extensive and look really awesome, so definitely check them out. In Neverwinter Nights 2, anytime that people put quality prefab areas out, they get a lot of traffic, just because the Neverwinter Nights 2 toolset is harder to use. Neverwinter Nights 1 to produce really convincing areas, and anytime somebody in the community takes the time to package up some prefabs, it really helps out the community, especially module developers, persistent world developers. It really takes time off their development, allows them to spend some more time developing the stuff that you're playing it for, the custom content and the ideas and the story. So it's a great thing, and it really helps people out who aren't as versed in the tool set as others. So, yeah. And it's great.
And the other thing, too, is, as you said, too, I mean, as you look through the images, and I'm sure the modules themselves, it definitely has a higher level of detail than a lot of the random prefabs that you'll see. So this one's definitely worth taking the time to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in upcoming days, we'll actually do a prefab contest. Our next contest after the creature model one will be that one. And we'll get to that in a moment. Yeah, something else I noticed, too, is really cool. There's an NWN2 server console update by Skywing. He's developed a ridiculous amount of, like, niche applications and things to support the Neverwinter Nights 1 and Neverwinter Nights 2 community, actually making the community possible, if you ask me. One of the things he just did is he came up with this NWN server console, which is a replacement for the broken server monitor console, remote server management applet. It allows remote administration of player lists, ban lists, you know, all kind of cool stuff for the NW2 server instance. If the server admin's password is configured, you know, it has the ability to unban players without a server restart. That is actually used for worlds that do not have their own custom, you know, boot ban systems on a database. This is actually really easy, because in the past, you know, if you didn't have a setup like that, you had to go in and actually, you know, click ban boot or whatever. But if you accidentally click the wrong person, now you don't have to remove their entry and reboot the server. You know, now that this is something that's on the fly, anything that's on the fly is great for persistent worlds. So this, you know, hats off to you again, Skywing, for putting another quality piece of software out there for the Neverwinter Nights 2 community. One other thing I wanted to bring up before we move on is, recently everybody in the Neverwinter Nights 2 community, I'm sure one, but I haven't checked it, has noticed that the BioWare community login has been deactivated, so that you'll get about a 30 second awkward pause, is a term we use here at the podcast for awkward pauses between segments, but a 30-second awkward pause in between the time you click your submit on your username and password. The reason is that the actual BioWare community server is down due to it being hacked. They had posted information about it going to be reworked to stop these problems. So at the end of the day, to let everybody know that is going to be the way it is for a while. The reason I bring it up isn't because of that. Most people know what's going on already, but there's something that we have discovered at the Realms of Trinity on our server. You know, I don't know what made me think of it, but I was sitting there one night working on our latest release, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, I go into playtest, and I said, man, I wonder if I put it, I can log, I wonder if it lets, since it's the server, authentication server's done, I wonder if it'll let me log into somebody else just by using their username and whatever password. So I went in, and I went in there, and I logged in as one of our other DMs just by using his username. And I got all his characters from his vault, was able to log in the server as him using his characters. Immediately, my head almost blew off, because I realized the negative implications that could have on a persistent world. I wouldn't say most, but there's a handful of persistent worlds out there that are already have some kind of CD key tie-in, but not many do, because, you know, obviously we want to give people the ability to play their character on a different, if they go over to buddy's house or they bring a laptop or something, they have different actual purchased copies of the game, have different CD keys. They want to be able to play their characters on wherever they happen to be. It's totally legitimate, and it's actually inviting. But the problem with this is now we have to tie CD keys to players. Now, we were already doing that in our database before, but this forced us to have to actually do a database lookup on that player's account when they log in to make sure that the CD key that they're logging in with currently is the same as what they registered the account with. If it's not, they get banned. They get booted in 5 seconds. It's a necessary precaution. I don't think I need to spell out all the repercussions that can happen, but you know, it's staggering. I mean, you can't have people being able to steal stuff from other players and or using their login to do things that would get them get that player banned or all the above. So it's definitely something that needs to be looked at. So getting back, bottom line is that at the end of the day, it's definitely something very dangerous for the Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 community to have that vulnerability out there. I've already contacted several Persistent Worlds that we had interviewed in the past that I know the administrators and gave them the information that they needed to get this patch. But I urge every Neverwinter Nights 2 Persistent World out there to make sure that you're checking that CD key and booting the rear ends off air if somebody tries to hijack an account, because it could be sure death to your server if that continues on and everybody's accounts are jeopardized.
Yeah, that'd be something that I'd almost throw it out to the community to come up with a solution yourselves, so even if it does come back up, your server still has some level of protection.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty much going to have to be handled on a server-by-server basis because everybody's database designs are different. You may or may not be using the NWNX4 for database connectivity. You might not even be saving your CD key. I mean, I hope you are, but if you're not, then you know you got some problems on your hands. So I just want to make sure everybody was aware of the situation so that it could be resolved as soon as possible before problems arise. And last but not least, I want to talk about we have released on our website underneath the contest tab our first Neverwinter Nights podcast contest. It's for Neverwinter Nights. It's for Neverwinter Nights 2, and it's going to be basically a contest entails creating a custom model, creature model, for the Neverwinter Nights 2 game engine. You know, we have all the details out there. The deadline for your submissions is 9/1/2011. And just by sending an email to us or a private message on our forums to us with your submission in ERF format with the appropriate 2DAs, textures, all of this, the models, everything that it entails, you can get as elaborate as you'd like with custom scripting. The more complete a model is, the better. You know, if you want to put the whole kitchen sink into it, then more the better. Winners will receive first place gets a Neverwinter Nights podcast Realms of Terrain t-shirt that we had created. Aron did a fantastic job designing and producing. Brad goes to first and second, and first place person will get an interview on the podcast and will be permanently placed on our winners page for these things and posted to the IGN vault. So I urge everybody who has any interest in doing Neverwinter Nights creature models, whether even if it's just even a convert from Neverwinter 1 to 2, that'd be awesome. And, you know, I think that the community really would appreciate it. And I know we'd appreciate it here at the podcast and at the Realms of Trinity for everybody who can possibly put something together.
Yeah. And something I'd like to mention that too is, I mean, the big deal is the attention to detail stuff. We're not necessarily saying it has to be lore based. We're not necessarily saying that we don't want it to be lore based. We just want to see what you guys can come up with.
Absolutely. I mean, it's totally open season. I mean, the rules, the guidelines, rules are out there on the podcast website. They're wide open and ready to rock and roll. So definitely anybody who can, you know, get in there, it'd be great. And you know, with that, you have anything else there, Aron, you want to share with the community?
No, I think that's everything.
Awesome. Well, we got an interview from the guys over at the Rise of Sauron Third Age. Neverwinter Nights 2, Persistent World. Well, hey guys, thanks for coming on the Neverwinter Nights podcast. It's an honor to have you guys.
It's an honor to be here. Thanks.
Yep, it's an honor. Thank you for inviting us.
In fact, seeing you a lot of your work out there and, you know, getting Hall of Fame and just a lot of press for the quality and the dedication you've given the Neverwinter Nights 2 community for a Lord of the Rings based and really lore rich server. I really want to say, you know, before we started, it's really appreciated for the community. To get started, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself? You can get as personal as you want, or you can stick to Neverwinter Nights related info, or both.
Okay, well, let's start. I've been a Neverwinter Nights players since 2003, where I've been introduced by one of my friends to play on a actually on a Middle-earth setting, Persons of the World, which was called The Return of Middle-earth. And from there, I've played a couple months, actually a year. But it was toward the end of the game per se, of the Persistent World. So I've moved it to various Neverwinter server to finally learn that they would create another instance of the Neverwinter Night game called Neverwinter Night 2. So I just prepare myself to work on this, to prepare my own module based on that. So I spent a lot of time working on the Neverwinter Night 1 toolset and to get myself ready to jump into the new toolset without even knowing that how huge the beast would have been on Neverwinter Night 2.
Yeah, I can relate to that feeling. A lot of people I've talked to have the same exact, you know, they weaned themselves up and, you know, the learning curve's pretty steep at first, no doubt about that.
Yes, exactly. So this is basically the my background story as a Neverwinter Night Blade player as well. I'm not much of a gamer per se, so I don't try every next game that's come out. So I'm pretty conservative game wise. So I've been around for Neverwinter. I play a little bit of Diablo, and also I'm much into the sports game. And most recently, since my daughter bought a Nintendo Wii, I'm playing Guitar Hero and Super Mario Kart, which is totally different than that. But that's typically my story as a gamer.
Nice. You have a lot of experience back in with any like D&D stuff, like the standard Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. Have you played any of the original pen and paper stuff? Or
yes, that's back in college. I was a huge fan of the Dungeon and Dragon, the Advanced Dungeon and Dragon first edition. Played a lot, played about like over 10 hours a week, and played that for like two, three years. And then at the end of college, the second edition came out. I bought a couple of books, but never really got into it. Where I found the rules slightly too put toward the magic and all. So I'm a purist.
You're purist. Yeah, I never did migrate past 3.5. That was about as far as I got. After that, that was it. So let the computer do it after that. That's what I say. What about you, Jim? Well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, I started playing in Neverwinter Nights 1 Persistent Worlds when I had moved away from my pen and paper group just to find something to try to meet that fix that I needed. And that sort of just graduated naturally into Neverwinter Nights 2, where I ended up, because of my love of Tolkien and all that, I found the world that Martin had created back when it was just the Rome, which was the Return of Middle-earth 1, I think, at the time. And I was a player in that persistent world and into Rome 2. And then Martin asked me to join his team as a DM at that point, and I remained on board to help with concept for the Rise of Sauron.
Nice. So you played a while before you got actually into the DM scene.
Yeah. I didn't have any idea of what, you know, what the DM interface looked like or anything. So, but I, you know, I got a crash course, and I'm fairly technically savvy, so I think I've caught on at least with the technical side of it pretty quick. I still have a lot to learn from other people about maybe some of the role-playing aspects of the DMing. But
yeah. I when I talk to people too, we do some other interviews and stuff, and you know, I hear the same thing. It's like, you know, you once you get past learning the tool set stuff, I mean, not tool set, but the DM client, is you can actually, you know, you have to get in there and understand the nuances. It's almost like a whole nother thing, you know, the way they run RP events and stuff like that. It's interesting. There's definitely a learning curve there.
No question. Yeah. And I am also a veteran player from first edition, and I did second edition, third edition, 3.5, but I balked at 4.0 so far, so.
That's a shame. Yeah, I hear that also all too often. 4.0 is just like kind of balked at. But here's what I say, though. What I say is, that's great that Neverwinter, the new MMO from Cryptic, is going to be 4.0. That's why I don't have to learn the rules.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I just saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't got to worry about it. You get a graphical version right there. So
yeah, pretty complicated. So
that's fine. You know, as long as computer handles it.
Yep.
So anyhow, what got you started in creating the Rise of Sauron Third Age? What was your vision behind it?
Rome 2 was technically, we had sort of moved it into the fourth and the fifth age after the War of the Ring. So we had a lot of freedom, or I should say Martin had a lot of freedom with plot and just where were we going with events and interacting with the characters. It was wide open because it was there was nothing in Tolkien lore to hamper or guide us, I guess. This, the Rise of Sauron obviously is in the Third Age, and we started right around 3000, I think a little before 3000, and so obviously we're constrained by what happens in the trilogy. So the vision of this one was, we wanted to create for the community and for the amazingly loyal players that we've had through Rome 1 and Rome 2, and even before that when Martin was on and I wasn't, a world that was just as true and as accurate and as lore, as canon to Tolkien's world as we could make it, using the tools that we had within Neverwinter Nights 2. So
yeah, that's awesome that you spent that level of detail. I mean, going through and getting the lore and stuff like that, it really adds a lot to the server.
Yeah. I mean, it sort of seemed easy, I think, at first, but when, Martin had much more experience with actually making one of these things come together, and it's just daunting the amount of work that was put into it, and just the questions of how to bring Tolkien's world, which is vastly different than Neverwinter Nights 2, which is based on Faerûn, and to fruition was difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, just for the simple fact that there's a lot of stuff that's in the game, like in the tool set available right out of the box, that's, a lot of that stuff is tailored for Faerûn.
Right.
You're basically reusing the exact same stuff that they used to create the game itself, the original campaign. So, I can imagine that you had a lot of interesting times, with placeables, renaming them so they don't, or stuff like that to make sure that it doesn't say, not using specific god symbols and God only knows what else you ran into to do that, to get that level of detail covered. That's huge.
Yeah, I mean, creating the classes to not destroy the flavor of Tolkien's world was very difficult as well.
It's very difficult, but what I've seen of your work and everything you've done, it's very rewarding. I mean, you've put something together that's an immersive whole environment that is Lord of the Rings because you spent that time to do it. So, I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and, Martin obviously deserves most, if not all, the kudos for that. He's a juggernaut.
Three cheers for Martin.
but also, you mentioned a very interesting point where you put like all the definition, all description, all the things that they were Faerûn from all the blueprints available in the toolset. But there's a lot of blueprints and a lot of tedious work that needs to be done. And sometimes there's been a lot of works that have been done, which was quite easy, but so tedious. And in that regard, Jim can tell you about it, especially for the item side, but also we have a lot of our other developers that have spent a lot of time spending time in the encyclopedia of Arda on the website, looking for resource, running into the books, Silmarion, to find epic items, to descriptions. Go into the MERP modules, the whole ICE MERP module. So all this kind of research has been done with all the DM. It was not actually tool set work, but it's still a tedious job that has been done by the team. So to try to reflect Middle Earth as close as possible, there's sure it is sure a lot of work behind that. Yes.
Most certainly, it's tedious work. I just speak from experience. I know what you're talking about, but you went to the next level, having to do all that level of detail. That's huge.
But I don't believe it's. I don't believe it's. It can be considered as a huge task. As when you do it, you enjoy doing it. So for me, I'm a big fan of Tolkien anyway. So just reading a book, just to read a book, or read a book to create example a world. If for me, it's the same kind of task. Except one is you can make it. The other players can take advantage of it. Can play it. Can feel it. So it's. For me, it was a lot of time, but it was a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they always say if you get a job that you love doing, because it doesn't fit any work. You know, you're absolutely right about that. How long Ian's guy's been live with your latest server?
Like October. Oh, October 1st. Yeah. Okay.
So Ian's been live for almost 4 years.
Rome has been sent live on December 2007. TRS has been live in November. I'm sorry, October 2010. The reason I bring both is that the Rise of Sauron have been created and developed while Rome 2 was still running.
So, I see. Okay.
So it was just a matter of putting a shutdown on the server and put the server back live.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, that's a heck of an accomplishment. I mean, well, between the two projects, you've been 4 years. That's very significant, especially when you did a lot of your development. The tool set was still in somewhat of a green stage. I mean, it really didn't get really patched up real well until mid-2008 or so. So you definitely had a lot of fun there, I'm sure, dealing with some of the early bugs in the tool set even. So you've been around a long time.
Yes, we have been. The lot of challenge that the tool created in the early beginning, especially in the first release, 1.0, 1.04, 0.5, 0.6, especially 1.06, has been quite a challenge. But I would say that regardless of whatever we can say about Neverwinter Nights 2 being a crappy game at some point, or being a lesser instance than Neverwinter Nights 1, I can confirm you that I'm sure I'm speaking for other people as well, other admins, where after all the work done and debug done and all the community additions that have been made, the potential of Neverwinter Nights 2 is far ahead than Neverwinter Nights 1.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that. I mean, I hear that from almost everybody I've talked to about it too. So you're absolutely right. All the work they put into it definitely brought it to where it's at now. It's just a shame that we talk about stuff. It's a shame that whenever something gets first released, and this is something we talked to Shane Hensley about in our last interview from Cryptic, and how they're really paying attention to getting the initial release airtight and putting a lot of quality and stuff like that into it, because we want to avoid having another situation like that where a game gets a bad rap because of the bugs it's rolled out with. I mean, that's definitely something it's a lesson in history, let's put it that way, that hopefully games in the future will learn from, so that game developers will learn from, so that they're able to go back and say, hey, you know, we're not going to develop it like this. We're going to develop it solid. And this way, it may not have as many features. However, at least you know it's going to work. So that's the big part right there.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. How would you classify your persistent world? RP, action, adventure, high, medium, low magic?
We're definitely a persistent world that is RP intensive, but I wouldn't classify it as an RP server because we do have a lot of adventure involved. We have a lot of quests in place that can be done. If you're a person that plays in an off time from maybe some of the more mainstream times, I guess, which would be associated with US, you know, East, you know, Central, West kind of thing. So, and we do have sort of a friendly environment where we don't have, we're not discouraging or getting down on players that aren't as role play intensive as some of the others or are learning to role play. I would say it's a very mentoring attitude that we have in that respect. As for the magic, we're definitely low magic, which was on purpose to try to mimic the Tolkien world, which, you know, if you've read the books and even if you see the movie, there's just not an abundance of items that are like those that you would find in Faerûn, which, as Martin was talking about, was part of the challenge in the research stage was even trying to find items that we could put in the tool set to at least make it interesting for players. But we're still, you know, canon to Tolkien's world.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. I mean, people walking around with swords plus 50 and, you know, everything else. I can imagine that destroying the effect.
Well, yeah, and the magic actually, and I'm not just referring to the items either per se, the low magic translates into the classes and the prestige classes as well, to also try to stay in with the lore of Middle Earth. So, for example, a lot of the sorcery is limited to the Eldar, the elves, or the Avari from Mirkwood, those elves. And also we have, you know, the Numenoreans, which have their own version of some magic. But we also, I shouldn't say we, but Martin, also removed some of the more, how do I want to put it, extravagant spells that we just couldn't justify when we discussed how we were going to do it with the spell casting. We couldn't justify having them in the module at all. There's nothing in any of the books or in the Silmarillion or even in the Tales books that would support having them in there. So they were removed completely.
One of the example of what Jim says, for example, the spell Wail of Banshee is not in the, because there's no way we could fit that in the Tolkien world. So we understand that this is a very popular spell for sorcerer, but and also what we try to do in order to keep it as low magic as possible is that we have put a way that all the classes and prestige classes are limited to some of the race based on the lore of what we know from Tolkien. So this is where we try to be as close as possible as Tolkien. So it can be very interesting for someone who is use it to the Faerun server to come to our server and just try out just the variety and the changes for the class and race. It can make it very interesting, even to those who are interested by the mechanics of the play and not really the settings.
Yeah, I can understand that. That's good. How many DMs do you have on staff?
Right now, we have a total of four DMs. We never had a lot of DMs since day one of Rome 2 back in Rome 2. However, we always based on the quality other than quantity. The advantage to that is that we have a better communication between each of the DM, so we are able to coordinate some of the campaigns and the plot that we are running. The only, I would say, bad side which we have to mention is that all DMs were part of the Eastern time zone. Of course, it can be an issue for players that are playing in the especially during the night, because we have a lot of players that are working at night, so they are DMing in the morning. So we have a pretty decent DM covering. However, we cannot compare ourselves to the one of the larger server because of our numbers, and also we do not pretend to have a huge team. We have a small, but teams that worked together. In the past 2 months, of course, the DM activities have been reduced by a lot because we are currently working on quite a huge patch update that will be released shortly, which I will discuss a little bit later on that show.
Are you looking for any additional DMs, or what you got right now seems to be doing really good for your world?
I cannot say that we are a close circle and we just want to keep amongst ourselves. Of course, we are always open to DMing new DM. We would like to, of course, if there's any DM ready and interested in Tolkien Lord of the Rings, we would sure have our ear all open and see what he does have to propose. But we never really run after DM, per se. The door is open, but we are not shouting out loud that we need DM.
Totally understood. Yep. what over like the past 4 years, you know, between both of your projects, what are some of the challenges you faced running a persistent world, period?
One of the main challenges for me was, personally for me, was the language. fortunately, I had the chance to be surrounded by two amazing person in the name of, which their nickname were Izzy and Ian, which were the two players that were really helping me in the tool set, but also were also helping me on the language side, because you probably all have known, but have figured out yet. But my main language is French. So, but these two people has really helped me in that regard. That's one of the first challenges. The other one was the scripting, because in life I'm no scripter. So fortunately for me, I have my friend Ian, who I need to put his name in, even though he's no longer with us. He haven't really played. He just came out to help, and he did a huge job, trying to break out most of the challenge. Most of the challenges that were mostly leaned toward the tool set and my everything related to the scripting. So with him, I learned a lot. He helped me to put Rome 2, which was, I would say, an okay persistent world, into the Rise of Sauron, which I believe is a really high improvement based on what was Rome 2 at the time.
Yeah, definitely running a persistent world has its challenges, but overcoming a language and actually coming along as well as you have, that's something. I could only imagine if I had to run it, our server, in a different language, I'd probably shoot myself. that'd be it. I'd be closing doors.
Yeah, but again, like I said, we have to understand, even though I'm speaking French here, not to go into back into history, but here, even here in Canada, there's most of the people speak English anyway. So most of the it's more about the literature. You don't want to write a quest where you have tons of typos and errors in it, so people can get to you quite quickly. So I wanted to have quests and conversation that were of high quality and nice writing. So, but this is what was. And the other challenge, of course, is and that's the same challenge for all Neverwinter Nights 2 developers, is of course the time. It requires so much time that I mean, I haven't really counted the number of hours put in that in boats, but I don't want to know.
I know exactly what you're saying. I try to not. After a certain point, I quit counting myself. Long time ago. It's a daily affair, and it's a dedication. I mean, and we've talked about that in the past. A lot of people don't realize how much time goes into developing a persistent world, and not just developing it, but maintaining it, patching it, working with the players' ideas, adding new things, keeping the world fresh, and there's a lot of work that goes into it. You just can't throw something out there and forget about it.
Definitely, and especially when you're dealing with various players and you are offering something which is free, you offer your things free of time, and of course you have either you do some modification or updates that you think that players will enjoy, but the next day you just jump on a forum and you find out that update you did was not really what players were expecting, and
Well, I burned up our forums a few times. I know how you feel. I've done, do some unilateral changes that needed to be done, or I felt that they were needed to be done, and then boom, it's like a bomb going off in your backyard. Yeah, I know what you mean.
One of the things I learned over these 4 years is that you cannot please everyone. That's if there were one thing I learned that would help me in the rest of my life, is that no matter what you do, you cannot please everyone.
Oh, heck no. Heck no. You could play that for playing, but, it's still what get everybody. I know what you're saying. You're right. You can't please everybody, but, you can do, from your experience that you've gotten from running your persistent world, you'll be able to learn from that and anticipate what people want. Obviously you read the forums, you're keeping up on all that too, and keeping up with what the player base is talking about. So you get the big picture then that way. You could please a good bit of people, but you can't ever please everybody. That's for sure. I think you briefly talked about this earlier in the interview, but do you have regularly scheduled events, or are they more like hit and run events?
Okay. As Jim mentioned earlier, is that we are, the name of the survey is of course the Rise of Sauron, but we are based on the events of the War of the Ring. So we started in 2975, which is about 30 years, actually more than 30 years, 45 years prior to the moment where Frodo is throwing the ring into the Lake of Fire. Now, what we're just starting from there. Recently, we moved the time to 3,000, and we're going toward the events of the ring. So for anyone who is familiar with the War of the Ring events and is following, for example, a wiki timeline, that will be basically his agenda for DM events. So for instance, in 3002, there was the birthday of 2001. Sorry, it was the birthday of Bilbo Baggins. So, what we for those who are either familiar with the movie and or the book or in the movie, it's exactly where when the Frodo, Pippin, and Merry are just putting that the huge fireworks dragon. So that particular event, we did it. So it was very fun, very nice. We had 6 DM online, about a dozen hobbits players, only hobbits running into Hobbiton. So it was a very interesting event. It lasted for like 2 weeks, every Friday. So this is the kind of a schedule event that we're gonna do. Of course, as we get closer to the War of the Ring, the events will be a little bit more frequent. Of course, if you take a look at the timeline of the War of the Ring, during the last 3 years, there's about an event every week or so. So in game, it reflects at about one event about two three days. So that said, other than that, we have a random DM appearance playing or running just one-time quests, where as the DM is running, going in, just start a quest, and when he logs out, the quest is over. Everyone got their reward, and everyone's happy. So in that regard, we have the two kinds of DMings.
Excellent. Yeah, I see. You definitely do a lot of different events and different types of events. That's awesome.
We recently, if you take as a reference the last 2 months, of course, it has been very, very slow because of the development we are working on. Actually, the update we are preparing right now is we're preparing the module for the last, I would not say the last mile, because last mile takes a long time, but we're preparing the module for the War of the Ring, especially. So for those who are aware of the Lord of the Rings story, if you log right now on our server, Saruman is still known as the good wizard. However, after August 5th, Saruman will no longer be the good wizard per se. He will still be good wizard, but he will have started to act as trying to convince or taking control over Rohan. So this is one of the few changes we're gonna do. And of course, more white hands or Uruk-hai around the land. So
that brings up something. I just thought of that when you said that. Do you have any like custom content, like as far as separate models or things that you'd be used to actually show the white hand on the orcs, or if you had done anything like that?
Concerning the content, I would say that the Neverwinter Night Vault have been one of our greatest allies for Third World Adventures. We have fair amount of custom content. We have over, I think it was 1.5 gigabyte of various. One of the most known is most of the chemo package, the sittable chair, also the emote. We're of course using like most the Charlie Vale, Eads, the PC tool. We're also using the fishing angler from Eads for those who like fishing. We are using the RWS works, especially for one of the areas I'm very proud of is our version of Moria, the mines of Moria. They have been built with the RWS pack by one of our players. And
wow.
I would say that this mine is a good reason just to come and try out our server just for this piece of art. It's scary, it's a very interesting place. It's exactly like for those who have seen the movie, it's creepy and it really took advantage of the RWS pack. Also, we have Minas Tirith, which we have used the BCK. There was already an instance or a template posted on the vault. Of course, we have modified it a lot to to make it look even closer to the actual Minas Tirith from the book and the movie. We have used a lot of a model for the ads. I could name all of those. We have used the Otter, we have used their package, but there's very many. They are all listed in our credit pages on our website. Every time we take something out of the vault, we straight put the reference and give credit into our credit page, which has a lot of name into that. So even though they haven't participated directly to our server, they are one of the main reason of our success.
Oh, you pay that much attention to those types of places. I can only imagine what your Minas Tirith looks like, especially using the BCK builder's kit. You could do a lot of stuff with that. Heck, we've abused that over the past 2 to 3 years. And I know some of the crazy stuff that could be made with it. I'd love to see your Minas Tirith. That's got to be awesome.
One name I haven't mentioned, but I would like to still mention it, is my girlfriend is also part of this project, and she is the one who actually made modified the Minas Tirith to what it looks right now. She also did all the NPCs for all the servers. So we have over 600 NPCs and over 400 creatures. She did all the design for all of those. So that's a lot of help for everyone who knows. So that's a lot of help. So I would like to thank her. Take the chance here to thank her.
Well, that's really cool. It's great when you got people close to you helping you out. It takes a lot of pain off of you. Plus the fact you get the creative talents of other individuals that, you know, you can actually work with on it. It's awesome. It shows when you get a product that detailed and that good of a rendition. That's awesome. You know, I would ask you, like, over the course of, you know, running your persistent world, I mean, there's a lot of enjoyable moments. So what's some of the ones that come to your mind as, like, you know, fun moments or really enjoyable moments or even satisfying moments of your persistent world?
I would say it was for technical reason we had to do a wipe. We had some very major issue in our database, and we were fairly new players. Were around level 12, 15 at max. They have put a lot of time, a lot of RPs, and a lot of stuff, and a lot of involvement into their characters. And for technical reason, we had to do a wipe. When we did so, I was very anxious as to see the reaction of the players as were they leave, because like me, you know that going through a wipe is can be deadly for a server.
Absolutely.
So I was very anxious. I made a last week intense update, and after we went live after the wipe, we just beat our record of attendance on the same night. We never had at that time 30 players, because 30 players is the maximum players, maximum number we have. And on that night, we hit the 30 players. So it was very exciting to see that after thinking that people would leave, you just beat your the record of the number of players on that log at one time. So it was, I would say, it was one of the enjoyable moments. So,
you know, in closing, you know, I wanted to ask you, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you'd like to share with the podcast audience and your players?
Yes, of course. First, I want to thank you for inviting us. So it's a very nice opportunity to us to speak a little bit about us other than just being a machine behind the tool set. But
our pleasure, man.
So, also want to thank all my players, the long-time players as well as the new player, but especially the long-time players that have been with us for, in some cases, as much as 8 years. I'd like to thank these players. And also, I would like to take this opportunity to give the news, to bring the I would say the scoop on our server, as on August 5th, they're going to be a major update on our server, as I mentioned previously, to prepare to the going toward the War of the Ring. And also would like to tell everyone who would be interested in playing in a Lord of the Ring Middle-earth Tolkien settings to join us on this new instance with the new patch with everything new. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to give us a few teasers of what's gonna be included in that patch. So I just want to let you know that on this patch, you're gonna be a few new areas. They're gonna be revamped races, revamped classes, prestige classes, Also, most of the resource and also the encounters will be slightly move around in the module to reflect the events of the War of the Ring. So even for veteran players, it will be a complete new place to discover and just to be careful. And also, we're going to move forward toward the War of the Ring. So a lot more DM presence. And one of the key features of that update is that there will be no longer evil players allowed, and therefore no PvP as well. So we want to put all the focus and all the focus toward the War of the Ring. So it's all the player versus Sauron. So hopefully Frodo will, the players makes the way safe to Mordor, so Frodo can throw the ring out of the in the lava.
Nice. That's awesome. Good stuff. Well, you know, I'll say it one more time. You know, it's been an honor to have you on the show and you know, sharing with us what you did. And you know, I can only hope to get my rear end on your server at some point when I can get myself away from our stuff. But you know, I'm definitely looking forward to, you know, checking out your content and you know, getting in there and having some fun in Middle Earth.
It was a pleasure to be on your show, and long life to the podcast.
Hey.
So to the Rise of Sauron.
That's right. Well, you get the closing line.
To all the players, now get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity. We're solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2011.